Wow, that is really hard. You really think you can go all day long? Well, you always left me satisfied and smiling, so...
That's what she said!
Michael! Michael!
Come
Michael,
on.
Please.
Gotham Sports Network presents NYG Weekly.
NYG Weekly, episode 28. It is the post-draft roundup. Let's get into the housekeeping before we get into the business. You guys already know the drill, but if you don't, first things first, go subscribe to our podcast. If you're listening for the first time, go ahead, subscribe on iTunes. You'll see the link in either of our Twitter bios or on Facebook. You can also subscribe on Audioboom. Just type your email address in there and get the episode fresh to your inbox when it goes live. Also, if you're on an Android device, we're on the Google Play Store, so there's really no excuse for you not to listen to this. So go ahead, subscribe on either three platforms. Second thing, go follow us on Twitter. You can follow me at EthanGSN. You can follow Weiss at NYG Daily. And we are being joined, recurring guest, Dan Schneier, Pro Football Focus, CBS Sports. You can follow him on Twitter at Dan Schneier NFL. Dan, welcome back.
Happy to be here, guys. I can't wait to talk about this Giants draft. It was an interesting one.
Very interesting. Very excited. I figured we'd start. We'll do something a little different. I'm going to put 60 seconds on the clock, and each of us are going to give our sort of overall thoughts on the draft. Before we get more in depth, we'll obviously get more in depth, but just sort of a quick 60-second rundown. So, Weiss, I'm going to let you start, and I'm going to start the clock. 3, 2, 1. Go.
First off, Dan, welcome to the show. Thank you for coming on. The draft, it was an interesting first round. I woke up in the morning on Thursday definitely expecting the unexpected. And, hey, that's exactly what we got. Evan Engram in the first round. Intriguing guy, a guy that I, you know, watched a lot of early on because I thought he could have been a second-round pick. But as the combine went by in his pro day, he saw his stock rising and he became kind of like that early second, late first guy. Overall, you know, I give the grade of a B, maybe B minus. The one pick I did not like was the quarterback in the third round, and not because I thought drafting a quarterback in the third round was wrong. No, I just not a fan of Davis Webb. I loved the fourth round pick, Wayne Gallman, the running back from Clemson. I think he is just, you know, he's played in big games, and he's such a slashing runner. Kind of reminds me a little of DeMarco Murray. Also, I saw an interesting...
Weiss, you're off.
All right. I got my Wayne Gallman love in there, so...
You did. And we'll get more in depth. All right, Dan, 60 seconds on the clock. Go.
Well, see, we're not doing this PTI style, so you don't get those extra seconds if you need them. So I'm just going to jump right in. I'm going to say, this is a draft that grew on me. Well, the Giants did, which I liked, which was... they addressed needs, even though it was need plus value, like they'll tell you, and it is true, in the first two rounds. And later on, they got some values with Gallman, with Avery Moss, who I think reminds a lot of people of Robert Ayers, and me too. He's a Spags-type defensive end who can move into defensive tackle on passing downs. And they did the same thing with Bisnawati. Now, the one thing that worries me the most about this draft is not the fact that I don't think Evan Engram can be a great player in the NFL, because I do. If he was a wide receiver prospect, he would be a top 10, 15 prospect. He runs a 4.42 at 2.34. And this is not just, combine speed. You watch him on tape, and he's that good. But my issue is, if you're going to spend the number 41 overall pick or whatever it was on Sterling Shepard a year before, it's very hard for me to understand investing that pick in Evan Engram. Now, I do think Engram will be a bigger playmaker and a better player overall for the Giants than Shepard. I'm willing to make that call. Shepard's a little less explosive than I thought, but they play the same position.
That's it. That's 60 seconds.
I'll take it.
You'll take it. All right. How do I turn this off? All right. I'm putting myself on the clock starting now. I'm a big fan of the draft. It grew on me a lot. I think value-wise, they got a lot of great players. I am a big fan of Adam Bisnawati in the sixth. From what I saw, a lot of people had him grouped with that second-tier offensive tackles. Moten, not Ram Chicken Cam Robinson, but in that like third or fourth round, and getting him in the sixth round, I think was great value. I think Engram solves a lot more problems than people realize. it sort of solves that problem the Giants were facing this year with that too high safety look a lot. I think he's a better blocker than people realize as well. And they also brought in Rhett Ellison. So, you know, between him and Jarrell Adams, they sort of have the blocking, sort of covered. So I'm a big fan of the Engram pick. Dalvin Tomlinson, love. I think he has more of a pass rush presence than someone like Hankins did, and he can also stuff the run. So overall, this draft is really growing on me, and we'll get more in depth in a few seconds now. 3, 2, 1, my time's up. All right, that was it. Let's get into Evan Engram specifically. Like I said before, I'm a big fan of the pick. I think it solves more problems than people realize. I think he's a better blocker than people realize. Dan, I'm going to throw it to you. Let me get your thoughts on Engram between the value, the problems he solves. And you did mention picking Sterling Shepard last year. So let's get into it and get really in depth here.
Yeah, so the way I see it is this. I don't really care if all the mock drafts have Evan Engram going in around pick 40, around pick 35, whatever it was, mid-second round. And I don't care. I don't really think that his combine really made any difference on the Giants' valuation of him. I think when you watch this guy on tape, you see a guy whose speed actually shows up. That 4.42 speed is very legit. It's game speed as well. I mean, and they didn't even use him perfectly at Ole Miss. So now I've seen 10 videos of Engram on Draft Breakdown. I've watched them all. And some of those games are without Chad Kelly because he was suspended or whatever happened with him. I actually don't even know his full story. I believe he was suspended. And you have this crappy backup quarterback in from Ole Miss. And Engram's stats are just go way down in those games. And you just see that he's still getting open because on Draft Breakdown, they do a great job of showing you kind of the route running and how the receivers are actually and the receivers and tight ends are actually doing on the play independent of their quarterback. But what I noticed is he's still getting open. He's still running routes the same way, but you know, he just doesn't have the quarterback throwing the football. And yet, even with that, even with the issues he had at quarterback at Ole Miss, he led all tight ends, according to Pro Football Focus, in yards per route run, which is a statistic they use to kind of break down how effective a receiver or tight end or anyone catching the football is on a per route basis. So instead of saying, okay, this guy had 1,000 yards, but maybe he ran 1,000 routes. This guy had 1,000 yards. He ran 700 routes. He was more effective on them. So he led all tight ends in that. And like you said, I think you put it best, Ethan, he is a much better blocker than people think. Now, he's not going to line up straight in line and be able to block down on defensive ends at the NFL size. But he can hit those speedy linebackers in space and those new nickels that the NFL likes to use, which are now basically just safeties or corners or like basically linebackers masquerading. Safety is less masquerading as a linebacker, and he can block those guys. But my biggest issue with this pick, and I mentioned it before, is that essentially the idea is the Giants couldn't beat the cover two last year because, you know, they didn't have a safety to run down the seam or to run those out patterns. And that was true. I mean, you watch Will Tine, he couldn't get down the seam. He couldn't take those out patterns for any yards after the catch. And those are two areas where Engram can definitely, you know, help the Giants. But the question is, why wasn't Shepard able to do the same thing as somebody who was lined up in the slot on over 91% of the plays, ran a 4.48 at the combine 2 years ago, and has some game speed? So the issue to me is maybe somebody with Engram's size at 6'3" versus the 5'11" Shepard can challenge defenses in a different way. That's what I hope. But I'm not sure if it's just an immediate solution. And my one worry, like I mentioned earlier in my 60 seconds, is that the Giants can't play Rhett Ellison, Sterling Shepard, and Evan Engram at the same time. They have to pick two of those three. And if you're going to put Engram and Shepard on the field, it's really going to be, in my opinion, a detriment to the blocking game. Not as much because I don't think Engram can block down against those linebackers and nickel guys, but because Shepard to me is a negative as a blocker. The grades show it. He's 5'11", 180. So when you have those two on the field, I'm a little bit worried about how the Giants can get away from being a multiple offense and become too one-dimensional.
Yeah, no, you bring up a lot of good points. To your point regarding Shepard's blocking, honestly, if you throw Engram in there, and I think that if you're going four wide, And I'm talking obviously about a situation that isn't going to have a lot of blocking, and it's obviously going to be a shotgun play. But if you go four wide and you have Odell Beckham and you have Sterling Shepard and you have Evan Engram, that right there is three guys who all ran sub 4.5 40s, and that's a lot of speed. And when you have Engram coming out of, you could have him out of the backfield, you could have him out of the slot. You're gonna have a fast guy who's gonna be bigger than most linebackers, faster than most defensive backs, I think it's really going to create a mismatch nightmare. And it's something that we saw a lot last year. I mean, you brought it up yourself. Will Ty was basically a dump truck, and Larry Donnell, not only could he not block, but he would catch the ball and do a front flip for no reason. I mean, everyone has seen the GIFs. Everyone watched the tape. So, you know, just adding that versatile tight end. And to me, I think the biggest surprise was the fact that the Giants favored him over David Njoku. And, you know, it became less and less surprising when you found out that the Atlanta Falcons were high enough on Engram that they were trying to trade up ahead of the Giants to snag a playmaker like Evan Engram before he could go 23rd overall. So, to me, I really like the pick. You brought it up at the very beginning. It solves a need, and that need is a tight end who can do it all. I think he's very underrated as a blocker, and one of the Giants' biggest problems last year wasn't just, you know, blocking in general, but it was blocking at the second level, right? Paul Perkins is a running back who he'll shake you once, and then it's all downhill. It's one cut downhill, and I think if you have a blocker who can really get out to that second level, it's really going to help the running game. And it's one of the reasons they brought in Brandon Marshall. Obviously, Brandon Marshall can be a dominant receiver, and he's a big target, and a big target that Eli Manning hasn't had in years. But if you add someone like Evan Engram, you know, he can block defensive backs no problem. And he can block most linebackers no problem. So I think that if, and we're definitely going to get into this later, if the offensive line, specifically Ereck Flowers and Bobby Hart, develop to the point that Jerry Reese is showing faith in, which I don't know if they will, but if they develop even a little bit and they can get that running back to the second level, I really think that Evan Engram is going to help the Giants' run game, you know, dominate at the second level, get open a little bit more. Weiss, I'm going to throw it to you and get your thoughts on Evan Engram.
Yeah, I mean, you guys pretty much nailed it, the concern, the pros and the cons when it comes to Evan Engram. The one thing I will say in regards to his blocking is after he was drafted, I spent a lot of time watching the way he blocks. And the biggest takeaway I had from it was that he's a very motivated blocker. He's not lazy. He doesn't give up on blocks. Yep. He'll go out there and he'll block. And he'll try his best. And sometimes, you know, he'll be overpowered. But you know that he's going to be motivated. And he's not something that he's willing to do. And that's definitely a plus, especially when you're going to be asking him at times to do that. I feel like a lot of times people get too caught up in the blocking aspect, but don't look at what he actually brings. And, you know, Ethan, you said he attacks that middle of the field. I think, you know, when he steps on the field in week one, he's going to be, you know, Eli Manning's second guy. He'll be that security blanket. Obviously, Odell right. will be one. But, you know, Ingram's going to be the guy that Eli's going to be looking at a lot, too. And I can easily see him being a guy that's the second leading receiver on this team. Versatility is big. You can line him up, you know, as an H-back. You can line him up in the slot. At times, he can line up as a natural tight end. So you can move him around. You can be, you know, clever with them, but he's a mismatch. He's a natural mismatch. Too fast for linebackers and too big for defensive backs. He has good hands. is a good route runner, and you know, when it comes to him physically, he has some room to grow. But you know, he's very gifted as an athlete, and I think that this is someone that the Giants, if used correctly, is going to be a really, really good weapon for them for years to come.
Now I'm going to throw something out there, and I think it's a good discussion point. Eli Manning threw for 4,400 yards and 35 touchdowns behind, in my opinion, and Dan, Pro Football Focus stats showed, I believe, a worse offensive line in 2015 than he had in 2016. In my opinion, even if Ereck Flowers is as bad as he was last year and the year before, I'm of the opinion that a tight end like Evan Engram can significantly, and even more than Rhett Ellison, alleviate some of the blocking issues, because if defenses are going to constantly throw out that too high safety look when you're just throwing out Odell Beckham and Sterling Shepard, right, it's easily defendable, and you sort of limit the route tree by throwing those two high safeties out there. By throwing in Evan Engram, I think it forces the defenses to change up their look a bit more, gives Eli even a little bit more time to find open looks, and then if they do throw that too high safety look out there, you can expose them down the seam because Evan Engram is faster than most linebackers and bigger than most defensive backs.
Right. I think I agree with that 100%. I mean, that's not my issue with the pick at all, because if you look at it, the deal with Engram is this. I just wanted to add this on because I thought it was really interesting. When I watched his tape, there were actually times he lined up at flanker, which was outside wide receiver, as the boundary receiver. And you look at him, he's a 6'3", 234-pound prospect with 4.42 speed. And that's not much different than kind of what Brandon Marshall came into the league as. Now, Marshall is has bulked up a little bit. He's changed his game a little bit. He's now more physical off the press. And this is something that Ingram would need to work on. This is not going to happen right away. But I think over time, the Giants may view Ingram as a potential outside receiver threat once Marshall moves on from his two-year contract with the Giants, or depending on where they go with that. You know, Marshall's old in age. So I think that's something interesting. And then if you just think about it from the slot, since most of these plays came from the spots, slot, Pro Football Focus had a really good stat. In the last two seasons, on balls thrown at least 20 yards in the air, Ingram's 10 for 17 for 337 yards and three touchdowns. That was the best of all tight ends they had charted. So he is a legitimate deep threat. He is somebody who can stretch the field down the seam, like you mentioned. And like you said, the numbers bear out the truth. I mean, the Giants offense was much worse. I'm sorry, the Giants offensive line was not much worse last season than it was in 2015. And according to Pro Football Focus, like you said, it was even a little bit worse in 2015. Right. So the fact of the matter is, I wouldn't blame it all on the offensive line. And the goal, the hope is that we can take that the Giants can take those 5-yard out patterns to Will Tye and turn them into first downs, or they can at least stretch the seam with Ingram on these third down conversions and through that, you know, open up things in the middle of the field. Because last season, like you said, defenses would simply bracket coverage Odell Beckham Jr. And to be completely honest with you, Sterling Shepard was not really beating his man in the slot that often. You know, he was matched up one-on-one with Nichols a lot. And again, it's not easy because they had that cover two shell with the safety over the top. So if Shepard wanted to break open that route and go deep, it wasn't as easy. Now the hope, the goal is that on those third downs, you're not going to lose too much blocking without Will Tye on the field. Trust me, even if they were using Will Tye in to pass block, or even if they were using Gerald Adams, who actually had a decent year run blocking, but not a good year pass blocking, they weren't getting much with those chips. So now you have four receivers going out into the formation. And there's three real reasons the Giants offense was so bad last year. One is the offensive line. Yeah, Eric Flowers and Bobby Hart straight up struggled to one-on-one block. But two and three, and these are equally as important as one, was one, their third down conversion rate was the bottom three in the entire NFL. And two, their red zone conversion rate as far as touchdowns go was really low. I think it was bottom 10 in the NFL.
It was
these
bottom
are two
10.
Areas. Yeah, and these are two areas that are immediately helped out by subbing in Will Tye and Victor Cruz, who I love Victor Cruz, and I still think he could be a decent slot receiver in the NFL, but was not at all a good outside receiver. And now you have Brandon Marshall and Evan Ingram coming in, at least on third downs. Like I said before, you can't have those four. You can't have that four receiver package in every down because it'll kill, in my opinion, it'll hurt the Giants and make them too obvious. But on third downs and in the red zone, you can certainly have that package in, and that's going to make a huge difference right away.
Yeah, I mean, and Wise, I'll throw it to you to sort of finish up the Evan Engram stuff. But if you know, some people who had problems with the pick, I feel like they aren't used to the Giants being as good as they were last year. I mean, let's be honest, they were an 11-5 team with a dominant defense. And if you look at what their offseason moves did, it was they brought in someone like Rhett Ellison, right? He's going to help block both in the run game and in pass protection. They brought in DJ Fluker, who's going to come in and compete at the right tackle and right guard position. And then in the draft, they brought in a versatile tight end, which they didn't have on the roster last year and severely limited their offense. And then in the later rounds, they brought in some offensive line help and a running back to complement Paul Perkins. So, you know, at the end of the day, the draft might not be too exciting for people, but it addressed serious needs that the team had. Weiss, I'll throw it to you for final thoughts on Ingram, unless you want to move on to Dalvin Tomlinson in the second round.
Yeah, just a quick thing on Ingram, and Dan brought up a good point, those little quick out routes that Will Tye ran. As I was watching Ingram, I was picturing him running those routes, and he can create those little out routes that go for 3, 4, 5 yards, and they can go for 9, 10 yards, and they can really do some damage with that. And I'll finish it up with this. You know, a lot of talk about, you know, the Giants now with these weapons. I think when you're adding Ingram, what's going to happen is Brandon Marshall, the signing was great, but I think the interest with Marshall started on Marshall's side, wanting to stay in New York and play for the Giants.
Right.
But with that said, I think having Marshall is sort of like a bonus for this team, and I think he will be like the fourth option behind Sterling Shepard, Evan Ingram, and obviously Odell Beckham. But I think this offense, for it to succeed, it's going to go through, in my opinion, Odell and Evan Ingram, and then obviously Sterling Shepard, with Brandon Marshall being a bonus.
Sure. I mean, we could talk about that more, you know, as the offseason progresses. You know,
we may need to touch on it a little bit later, because me and Weiss are not on the same page with that one.
You know what? Fine. Then let's touch on it right now, because to be quite honest, Dan, I think we're on the same page here, because I think Brandon Marshall is a target that Eli Manning hasn't had since Plaxico Burress. And I really think that he's going to be that kind of shit, let me just throw it up and see what happens kind of target. And it's someone that Eli hasn't had since, I mean, you can argue Martellus Bennett because he was a big target, but realistically, he hasn't had that sort of big-bodied receiver since Plaxico Burress. And at least in my opinion, it's been very evident that he's missed that type of big receiver. So I honestly, and if, you know, we'll get into this when we do our season predictions later down the road, I think Brandon Marshall might have the second best stats of all the receivers behind Odell Beckham at the end of the day.
I'll go as far as saying that I think Brandon Marshall has a actual chance to actually have the best stats, wow, including Beckham. I don't know. I don't know if he'll be able to beat him in yards. I think there's a better
touchdowns,
chance.
I think it's very, very.
I think receptions is going to be the interesting one. And I also think, and this is a whole different topic than what I want to touch on with Marshall, but I do think it could become an issue. I'm not as big a fan of, I love Beckham as a player, don't get me wrong, but I think he has a lot of growing up to do. I don't want to sound like one of these idiots in the media, these talking heads, but it is what it is. And he is only a 24-year-old kid, I think, right now. And I know when I was that young, I was a different person too. But like, there was a little bit of a time 2 seasons ago when Beckham wasn't getting targets for a short period of time when the Giants offense was actually doing well. And during the 2015 season, and he did make a few little comments. He didn't do it last year. He was getting a lot of targets last year, but we'll see. But my whole thing with Marshall is this, and I'll put it simply because I'll give 2 points here. My first one is, in my opinion, Eli Manning's best route, the best route he throws, the best route he's always thrown, and it's never changed, even though the personnel has changed and he hasn't had the right players to be able to use this route, is the deep in cut. It's the 10, it's in that 12 to 15 yard range where the receiver looks like he's running a vertical route and makes a cut inside. And now, of course, if there's a cover two look, it's harder to make this play happen. And if you don't have the right players to pull it off, it's harder to make this happen. But it's a play he used with Hakeem Nicks all the time, a guy who kind of profiles a little bit like Marshall, though not as tall, not as explosive, in my opinion. And not as fast. And then he used it a lot with Plaxico Burress too. So this is a route I think he's going to bring back in. It's more of the old style Kevin Gilbride offense. It's kind of more of a vertically based route. And I don't know if McAdoo uses it as much as he should in his scheme, but I think that Eli Manning is at the point of his career where he can basically tell Ben McAdoo, look, this route's going to work. Brandon Marshall runs this route really well. I think it can work. Let's move it. You know, let's mix it in. And I think the deal with Marshall is I actually went back and looked at all of his stuff from last year because obviously in 2015, he was one of the most dominant receivers in the NFL. He keeps great conditioning with his body. He works out harder than almost anyone. And during that season, he had like 1,500 yards, 14 touchdowns, over 100 receptions. And then last year, he was off to a similar start. If you watch his game tape versus Richard Sherman, he dominated him in that Seahawks game. And then he got hurt against the Bills on Thursday Night Football. And people don't realize this was a much worse injury than people thought. At first, when you watch it on, I was watching that game live. I actually thought he was done for the year, and so did a lot of my friends that are Jets fans. They all texted me, wow, that's it. Marshall's done for the year. And then, weirdly enough, he came back in that game. But I don't know. He then talked about after the offseason playing through the injury. And I think a healthy Brandon Marshall is going to look a lot more like the 2015 version. And he's never really had single coverage his entire career, at least not since his early days in Denver. And he's going to get it because he's the last, I mean, like, this is the thing with Ingram when he's on the field, and it's the same thing with Jordan Reed. You can't cover him with a linebacker, and you can't cover him with a nickelback. So you have to kind of at least change your defense a little bit to account for this guy, or else Eli's just going to keep throwing it to him every single play. So, and it's just like Jordan Reed. It's the same exact thing. And that, now you add in that with the fact that you can't also play Odell Beckham one-on-one, yep, either. You kind of have to have – so now what's going to happen? Brandon Marshall's going to be open, almost – or not open, but one-on-one coverage every play. And from what I saw last season, even playing through the injury, and definitely from what I saw from his 2015 tape, he's going to beat that one-on-one coverage every single time. I don't think there's a single cornerback in the NFL, in my opinion, who can cover him one-on-one. I really do feel that way. He's just somebody who has a different body type and a different way of – and because he's not only that explosive big receiver, he also is a great route runner. People don't realize how hard he works at his craft. So I think that Brandon Marshall's in for a huge season. I think he'll actually be the number two or potentially number one option, as crazy as that sounds.
Yeah, it sounds a little crazy, but I'm on the same page. I think you'd be number two. Number one, I think it's going to be Odell, but I agree on many of your points. All right, let's move on. Let's talk round number two. Dalvin Tomlinson, for those worried that Jonathan Hankins would create a gap in this defense, which, to be honest, I didn't think he would create that big of a gap in the defense. They brought in Dalvin Tomlinson, Alabama defensive tackle. He could play three technique. He runs stunts. Great pass rush, great run stop, and listen, going into 2017, you have a defensive line, JPP, Olivier Vernon, and in the middle, You got Damon Harrison, the best run stopper in the league, and a very highly touted Dalvin Tomlinson. I honestly think this might be the best pick in the draft. We'll get into who our favorite and least favorite picks were. But in terms of filling both a need and overall talent, I mean, and character. If you're talking about character, and you know how much the Giants love a high character guy, Dalvin Tomlinson is one of the most high character guys in this draft. Lost both of his parents at a young age, and then grew from it. Went to Alabama, succeeded, was a three-time high school wrestling champion, and according to some people, he could have gone on to be a heavyweight gold medalist at the Olympic level. So not only are the Giants getting a leader, but they're getting an athlete, and who better to learn from than Damon Harrison? So in my opinion, I think Dalvin Tomlinson could be, I don't want to say steal the draft, but in terms of all the Giants picks, one of my favorites. Weiss, what are your thoughts?
I'm going to be honest with you guys. At first, I didn't really think much of the pick. I was just like, okay, it fills a need.
Right.
But throughout the last couple of days, I've been, you know, reading up on him, reading up on his story, watching a little bit of him, and he's really grown on me. I definitely do think he's Jonathan Hankins, but a better pass rusher.
Exactly.
The story is really, really amazing when you actually look into it. I believe he was also accepted to Harvard or could have gone to Harvard, but he chose Alabama in football.
Interesting.
I really, really, really like what he brings to the table. I think, you know, listen, the Giants value their defensive line, as you can see. Pay JPP big money. They tried to re-sign Jonathan Hankins. Yep. They, you know, obviously Snacks and OV last year paying them that money. So you know that they value this position. And, you know, history has shown that when, you know, Jerry Reese drafts a defensive tackle in the second round, that defensive tackle usually turns out to be a really good player.
And let me throw this stat in. In 11 drafts, Jerry Reese has taken a defensive tackle in the second or third round 5 times. So it shouldn't have come as a surprise that he would look for one of those guys in the second or third round.
Is that including this Dalvin Thompson?
I believe so, yes, yeah.
So you're looking at 4 of them were obviously Barry Cofield.
Right.
Linval Joseph.
Jonathan Hankins.
And then Tomlinson.
Yep.
And then the
and
one
Bromley.
Mishap.
And Bromley was a third rounder, yep.
And then the one miss was Marvin Austin.
Second round.
And Bromley. Yeah. And Bromley.
And Bromley, if we're considering it.
I think Bromley was a Coughlin pick, honestly, the Syracuse
yeah,
thing.
Syracuse,
I think he pushed hard for that one, I think, Coughlin.
I'm going to agree with you on that one, too.
Yep.
And I think Davis Webb was more of a McAdoo pick than a Reese pick, but we can talk about that later.
Yep.
But I definitely like it. Definitely grew on me, and I'm definitely interested to see the one little concern of mine is obviously the injury history. I believe he tore both his ACLs, or he tore his ACL twice.
Yep. Once playing soccer as a kid.
Yeah. So he does have that. But other than that, I mean, you know, listen, this shouldn't come as a surprise. This team values their defensive line, and Tomlinson is you know, probably the best run stuffer outside of maybe John Allen in this draft.
Yeah, Dan.
I'm going to start by throwing two stats out that I love about Tomlinson in this pick. One, he had 70 hurries in 3 years at Alabama, and he only played over 50% of the snaps this final season because Alabama has such incredible depth on the defensive line that he only played over 50% of snaps one of those seasons, yet he managed to have 70 pressures, which is a lot for a defensive tackle. Even in a 4-3, that would be a lot. He played a nose in a 3-4. And he did say in an interview with Giants.com today that I listened to that Alabama plays a lot more 4-3 than you guys realize and that they're more multiple, and I believe that. But they play mostly that base 3-4. And you know, some of the pressures could have come when he's in the 4-3, but who cares? Good. That's what it'll be in with the Giants. So that's one stat I love. The other one was that he missed only 3 tackles total in his whole career at Alabama. That's awesome. That shows that he has the fundamentals down. They're not going to have to worry about that. And the other last thing I like, I'll give one more stat first, is that in his past 2 years, he had 9 batted passes. Because he actually has really, really long arms that people don't realize. And he's 6'3", a little bit taller than Hankins, who was 6'2". And he could bat down balls to the line of scrimmage similar to what JPP does. And that's a big thing. That's a big game changer in games. And I'll start by saying, at first, I was really disappointed with the pick, only because I didn't know that much about Tomlinson. I thought he was more of a 3-4 nose tackle run plugger. And on the board at the same time when they took Tomlinson was a guy I loved, Chris Wormley, Michigan defensive tackle who's 6'6", 300. I thought, one, he fit what the Giants love with size because they just love those type of size guys. And two, what I wanted for the Giants was them to kind of reverse strategy and switch it up on the defensive line with that 4-3-3 technique defensive tackle position. And next to Harrison, I wanted a pass rush first guy. And that's what Wormley is. That's what he'll be. He plays kind of like he's 275. But I realized something. The Giants don't need that. Not the way, not at least not for not as long as they have Steve Spagnuolo. The way Spagnuolo's scheme works is that he wants those two guys like Hankins, Harrison type, because both of those guys have better movement skills than give it credit for. And same thing with Tomlinson, because they can set up those third and long situations. And on those third and long situations, he doesn't need a guy like Wormley, because he's just going to kick Pierre Paul or Olivier Vernon or maybe Romeo Okwara this year, I hope. I'm kind of hoping for him to get some spot starts at that defensive tackle position, and he'll use guys like Kennard, now Avery Moss, some of the other guys at defensive end in those positions. So they don't need that type of three technique guy, pass rush first, I don't think. And the more I look into Tomlinson, the more I love it. You guys mentioned the fact that he could have went to Harvard, he went to Alabama. Both his parents died at an early age. The other thing I like about him is that he has 2 degrees already. He's a smart guy. He's going to pick up the scheme fast. And the last thing I like about him, actually, I think there's upside in the fact that he didn't start at Alabama until his 2016 season. Because I think if GMs had more tape on him, then he would probably be an earlier pick. I really do believe that, because when you watch him, he looks really, really, really good on tape. And agreed, he does play next to some great players, Jonathan Allen at Alabama. But guess what? He's going to have the same exact thing with Jason Pierre-Paul, Olivier Vernon, and Harrison. So this is another pick, like you said, I'm excited for. And I actually think there's a good chance. I know we kind of talked about it before when I made my point about Brandon Marshall, but I think there's a good chance that Tomlinson actually makes the biggest impact year one of all the rookies, including Ingram.
Yeah.
Hey, can I add one thing, Dan? You talked about him playing on a talented defensive line. He did play with some talented guys. But I remember listening to, I think it was Lewis Riddick, and he said when he plugged the tape on for the national championship game, he said he thought Dalvin Tomlinson was the best defensive player on the field for Alabama in that game, and if you watch that game, you can see why. The first national championship.
Yeah, the 2015 one, right?
Yep.
Yeah, Dan, I think you bring up a lot of good points, and you know, you bring up Wormley, a guy who's a bit longer and slimmer, and gives the Giants more of a pass rush presence inside. And I think one of the things that I was most shocked with was how effective Tomlinson was as a pass rusher when I watched his tape. They sent him in on a lot of stunts, and even when they didn't, and you brought up his size, I'm pretty sure he's got 34.5-inch arms, which is pretty large for a defensive tackle of his weight and height. And I really think that that adds to it. And you bring up a good point about Spagnuolo's defense. You know, if you shut down the run on first and second down, you kick some of your bigger defensive ends inside and bring more of your pass rushers on the outside, Kennard, Avery Moss, you're going to have an effective defensive line. And I think that's the Giants' scheme. And it's what we saw a lot last year. I think fans shouldn't have much of an issue with it. And if you look at how Jerry Reese treats his defensive tackles, draft them, use them, and then, you know, he doesn't really re-sign them. So I think Giants fans can expect a lot from Tomlinson over the next few years, and especially with Spagnuolo at the helm. I was very critical of him when they brought him back, but I think it's very clear that when he's got the talent, he knows how to use it effectively, and I think Tomlinson's going to be I don't want to say shockingly great addition, but I feel like a lot of fans may not know too much about him, and they'll be surprised once they start watching some games.
It's a New York Giant type pick.
Absolutely.
He is a New York Giant type player.
Absolutely. All right. We did Ingram. We did Tomlinson. Third round. Let's talk about quite possibly the most controversial pick of the New York Giants 2017 draft. Davis Webb. I don't know who to throw it to first. All I'm going to say is that he has grown on me a lot, and I am a fan. Weiss, I know you don't feel the same way. Dan, I'm not quite sure how you feel, so I'm going to let you start, and then I'll kick it to Weiss afterwards.
So for my job during the draft, I worked for 24/7 Sports. We were bought by CBS Sports, so I actually technically work for CBS Sports.
Yep.
But most of my stuff can be found on 24/7, some on CBS. So when this is going on, the draft, it's the most intense period of time for me for work. And I'm just like covering things rapid fire, getting out all this stuff at time. So, you know, as it nears the Giants pick, this is the first year ever where it's like I usually have like the 10 picks before mapped out in my head. I'm like, all right, these guys are on the board. These are the guys I want. So I didn't really have that this year. But I was looking at there was a few offensive linemen still on the board that I like. I loved Antonio Garcia. Then the Patriots moved up two picks to get him before us. I was pissed. I love this Kareem Hunt running back, and then the Chiefs moved up one pick. So now it's at our pick, and I'm like, I don't really have too many guys right now, but I know what I don't want. And then I hear it. The Giants are select. I didn't even hear it because the draft was ruined on Twitter. Ruined or, you know, exposed on Twitter by multiple beat writers and things like that. And I see Giants will select Cal quarterback Davis Webb. And I just was so disappointed in my first take from it, mostly because I don't like the idea of drafting for need and adding those two players in the first round and then getting a quarterback in the third round with a pick that, you know, could yield you someone like Darian Thompson. And there are a few other guys still on the board that I like that I have to go dig up now and let you know. And I'll actually do that in a second, come back to it since I don't have it prepared, unfortunately. But fact of the matter is, I think that in next year's draft, not only is it a better quarterback class, I actually saw a mock draft today where somebody, a guy I really trust, has five quarterbacks going in the first round of next year's draft. That just gives you an idea of the talent level of next year's quarterback class, but also because there's going to be far fewer teams who need a quarterback because they invested in them this year. The Texans aren't going to give up on Watson year one. The Chiefs aren't going anywhere near a quarterback. The Bears aren't going anywhere near a quarterback. So with all those things combined, I hated the idea of the pick. I didn't like the pick, but I didn't really know too much about the player. I'll be honest. It's tough to follow everything in the pre-draft process. Quarterback's one of the few positions I pretty much don't go that deep on for a lot of reasons. One, because I don't think I can do the best job of evaluating that position. I think my time's better spent on some of the positions where the Giants needed more, in my opinion. I thought quarterback was a luxury pick, but you know, I had to take a look at it because, listen, he was the pick. The Giants loved him. And I actually read something today that said Ben McAdoo was trying to get him in the second round, but Jerry Reese kind of like pushed that off and made him wait a little bit. I don't know if I totally buy that just because then wouldn't the Giants trade up in the third round? That's why I think that's kind of bogus, that report. But at the same time, he was the pick. I had to do my research. And here's what I come away with Webb. My cardinal sin with drafting quarterbacks is you don't want to get guys with a losing record. If you look over time, this is the one statistic that holds true. Quarterbacks with losing records in college are not good in the pros. Like if you look at it, there's only been three examples. One's Jay Cutler. He bucked that trend. I forgot the other two now. Fuck, I'm forgetting this, but it was a great article on this, and it's been like the last 14 drafts or so. So I don't like the fact that he was a loser at the college level. He went 5-7 at Cal last year. He lost the starting job at Texas Tech. But I did a little more research, and he lost that starting job to Texas Tech, one, to Pat Mahomes, who I think has unbelievable arm power. And yes, exactly. And two, due to injury. He just basically lost that because he got injured. So I looked back. I saw pretty much all the tape of Davis Webb they have on Draft Breakdown. And here's what I like. If I'm going to draft a quarterback and I'm trying to build my franchise, I'm not going to take a Nathan Peterman type, okay? I don't want a guy who has no arm strength, who can't cut through the winds at MetLife Stadium, who can't throw the 15-yard out routes, who can't drive the ball down the field. And that's not what Davis Webb is. And the other thing I don't want is a small quarterback. I know you can find the exceptions with Drew Brees and Russell Wilson, but for the most part, height plays a big role because you have to see over the offensive line. And Webb has both of those things. He's 6'5". He has a great, great arm talent, just absolutely amazing arm talent. Jerry Reese said he had the best arm in the class. I don't think that's too far off. I mean, you can maybe say...
I think Mahomes has a better arm. Mahomes. But, yeah.
You could say Mahomes, but the difference with Mahomes' arm is that he has a better arm overall. I'll give you that. But on the deep patterns, I actually think I like Webb's arm better because he has more touch on those go routes. So he actually has some touch, too, with his passes. I really think he's got a great arm. And the other thing I like about his arm is that he has kind of like a whip-like release. It's kind of like almost like a flick because he has so much power. So he can get the ball out quick. And that's huge for McAdoo's offense. His offense is all three-step drops, get rid of the ball, or out of that shotgun with that right leg back, the thing he taught Eli Manning, so you can get rid of the ball quicker. And that's the whole offense. That's why I know McAdoo fell in love with him. But when I watch him, he has a lot of issues. He is poor pocket presence, in my opinion, at this time. A little bit of case of happy feet. He's not the most accurate quarterback. He's really not. And all these things, you know, you're going to hope, you know, that they fix over time. But I don't know. I just don't love the idea of it. I think that they could have done quarterback in a different round. And I'm actually going to throw it to you guys and then look up some of the guys I liked who went a few picks after. But again, like I said, Antonio Garcia, Kareem Hunt were two of my top three at the time, and they went two picks ahead of the Giants, so I can't really complain too much.
All right, Weiss, I'll kick it to you because I know you didn't like the pick, and I'm curious to see if your opinion has changed over the last few days.
Well, you know, Ethan, you know me for quite some time. You know I'm fairly positive.
Yeah.
Things grow on me. Things grow on me.
And you know what? I feel like this is funny because you're going to be negative about this pick and I'm going to be positive. So it's sort of a little role reversal for the listeners who know us well.
Exactly. I don't like this pick at all. I mean, listen, I was out there and said, I don't mind if the Giants draft a quarterback in the first round. I thought that they were more interested in DeShone Kizer just because I think that he's more of what they're looking for in a quarterback. But Davis Webb, I mean, listen, I know he's got the arm and he's got the size and, you know, teams fall in love with that, but his decision-making is such a question mark. His deep ball accuracy is so, you know, just erratic. I mean, it's there's so many issues with him. And the one thing that was interesting was I always thought that this is why I thought that the interest in Mahomes was real was Mahomes is good as a scrambler. He can get outside the pocket, kind of like, you know, Aaron Rodgers, where he can get outside the pocket and make throws. But Davis Webb is not a factor when he's asked to run out of the pocket or scramble, and you know, carry that along with the deep ball accuracy. And you know, Dan mentioned a good point, winning. He wasn't really a winner at Cal. And, you know, that raises some question marks. I think he's a little slow when it comes to his pocket presence with press release setups. You know, his decision-making, I think cornerbacks can look at where he's throwing. He's very, very, very – the interesting word that they used to describe him was his decision-making is robotic in terms of where you can know where he's going with the ball. I don't know. Personally, I don't think this is successor to Eli Manning. I think next year is when we could probably see it. This could be a situation where the Bucs, remember, they had Glennon and he had a good year, and then they drafted another quarterback in Winston. I'm not saying that, you know, Webb is going to be a starter for a year. I just think that, you know, they can probably find their successor to Eli next year. And this pick to me just. I want to say it's McAdoo, but you know, when I read up on him and I read the same report that you did, Dan, in regards to how McAdoo wanted him in the second, but I just feel like McAdoo wants a more mobile quarterback who can has amazing speed and can get outside the pocket. And I just don't see that with Davis Webb, but I can see where they fell in love with him: the arm, the size, his background, but the accuracy issues, the decision making. Especially in the deep throws. I don't know if that's all fixable for something that they can do, but we'll see. You know, we're forced to hope, I guess. But go ahead, Ethan, tell me why you like him.
All right, there's a few reasons why I like him. Let's start with this. We like Darian Thompson, correct? Who's the third round pick last year, right?
Yeah.
You're a fan, I'm a fan. All right, before Darian Thompson, 2015, Owamugbe Odighizuwa, nothing. Before that, 2014, Jay Bromley, hasn't gotten significant playing time. 2013, Demontre Moore, not even on the team. 2012, Jaron Hosley, he was horrendous. 2011, Jarrell Jernigan, not on the team, wasn't very good. 2010, they didn't have a third round pick, but they picked Philip Dillard with their fourth pick, ineffective. The year before that, 2009, Ramses Barden and Travis Beckham, bad players. 2008, Mario Manningham. The point I'm trying to make here is that if the Giants were going to use a pick on a quarterback, it might as well have been third round and on. Because the other players who Jerry Reese has drafted, who have been asked to come in here and not make immediate impacts, but at least maybe provide relief for the starters or play great special teams, they just haven't come in and done that. So if they were going to use a pick, and you guys are saying that McAdoo wanted to use a second, but Jerry wouldn't let him, if they're going to use a pick on him, I am more than okay with them using a third round pick on a developmental quarterback who isn't expected to make an impact, but, you know, minimum 2 years, minimum, okay? Number two, Jerry Reese already came out and said he's going to caddy Eli for at least 2 years. So he's got a lot of learning to do. He came from an air raid offense. Very, very simple reads, not asked to do much, and that's something that he can learn because, as Dan mentioned, he has the physical tools. He's 6'5", he's 230. I think he's way more athletic than you're giving him credit for, Weiss. If you watch some of his videos, he's way more mobile than someone like Eli Manning, which obviously isn't saying much, but I feel like it could be a surprise for Giants fans when he maybe gets more snaps and actually gets some game time. Number three, I watched the Monday morning quarterback video of him analyzing his own tape and fell in love. He is an incredibly smart player. And if he has the physical tools and he's studying behind Eli Manning and he's as much of a film rat as he says he is and his coaches say he is, I think that he can pick up an offense like Ben McAdoo's. Number four, excuse me. Number four, if you just look around the league, you can look at our ugly cousins in the Meadowlands, the New York Jets, the Josh McCown, Christian Hackenberg, Bryce Petty-led Jets. It is not easy to find a franchise quarterback. The Giants, you know, were exceptionally lucky to have a guy like Eli Manning, who has not only two Super Bowls, two Super Bowl MVPs, is top 10 in passing touchdowns and passing yards, has not missed a game since he's become starter of this team. It's not easy to find your franchise guy. And if Eli Manning has a few years left, I have no issue with the Giants taking a chance on a third-round developmental quarterback, because it doesn't prohibit them from maybe taking one next year or taking one a year after that. You need to diversify the pool a little bit. And as I wrote in the Big Blue Hangover a few days ago, you know, you can look at the Redskins. They're not the perfect example, but they took RG3 and Kirk Cousins in the same draft because you never know. And you know what? Kirk Cousins ended up being a starter, and I'm not saying he's elite or a franchise guy by any means, but the more options you have, the better. So someone like Davis Webb, for him to come in here, you know, I'm going to be positive. I think he's better than Ryan Nassib. I think he's better. He has more potential than Geno Smith and obviously Josh Johnson. He's a pick that I'm going to get not excited about, but hopeful about, for all the reasons that I just mentioned. And whoever wants to come in here and give their take or their counter, feel free to jump in.
Well, I'm going to say one thing, and I'll let you finish it up, Dan. If you're Davis Webb, right, or if you're any backup quarterback that comes in for the Giants, but particularly Davis Webb, you're a third-round pick. You know you're not playing for at least 2 years. You walk into the locker room, right, and you look over and you see weapons like Odell Beckham and Sterling Shepard and Brandon Marshall, although you're probably not going to play with Brandon Marshall, but you see Evan Engram and you see Paul Perkins and Wayne Gallman, and you see all these weapons, and then you see Eli Manning sitting there. I want Davis Webb to go sit next to Eli Manning, and whatever Eli Manning does, I want Davis Webb to do that. If Eli Manning goes to the bathroom, Davis Webb needs to go to the bathroom and offer him toilet paper. I want him to be glued to Eli Manning for the next 2 years, become his neighbor. I know Eli lives in the expensive parts of Jersey. I want Davis Webb to go and live there too. I know rookie contracts aren't that big, but
he can rent an apartment.
Figure it out. Figure it out, my man. You need to be attached to Eli the way he acts on the field, off the field. You need to be exactly that.
And here's the thing. I think that all that is to me, it's close to a lock because, like Ethan, I've seen a lot of this off-field stuff, a lot of these like videos and things on web. And to me, he's a coach's son. He's yep. completely dedicated. He has an even keel personality, it seems like to me. So I think that's kind of great, especially for New York. It's kind of Eli-esque in that sense.
And Dan, let me step in here real quick. And for those who don't know, when he transferred to Cal, he was voted captain of the team within 8 weeks during his last year of eligibility. So he is a leader and someone that people respect and look up to.
Yeah, and that's 100% true also. As far as the pick goes, it's completely grown on me in that sense, as far as the actual player has right. grown. But to me, I still just can't get over what they could have gotten in the third round. And I know, Ethan, you make a good point. They failed in a lot of third rounds, but some of those have been due to injuries. And the other fact of the matter is, if you're going to make that comment, then why not it doesn't really account for the possibility of trading the third round. And this is the value board. The value chart says it would have worked. The third round and their first round to move up a little bit and get O.J. Howard. And I love Evan Engram. Don't get me wrong. They're different players. I think he may end up being a better player than Howard. But I think Howard is probably going to end up being a better player. And I think they're both going to be amazing NFL players. So this is not any knock on Evan Engram. I just think Howard was one of the cleanest prospects I've ever really research. I think the only reason he wasn't one of the top four or five picks in the NFL draft was because Alabama had no fucking clue how to use him, excuse my language, and just completely botched that whole situation. And that offense is just terrible, in my opinion. I know it works kind of for what they do, mostly because their defense is amazing. But Howard, to me, is a guy who can play in line, can also go out in the slot, ran a 4.51. He's as clean as it gets. And if you're going to tell me that, if you're going to ask me would I rather have Davis Webb and Evan Ingram or O.J. Howard, I'm going to tell you Howard. But at the same time, agreed, I'm starting to come around a little bit on Webb, and I know the Giants aren't going to trade up no matter what, so it doesn't really matter. And that's kind of a moot point.
Right. No, you know, I don't disagree with you. You know, if you give me the option of Evan Ingram and Davis Webb or O.J. Howard, I'm taking O.J. Howard 10 times out of 10.
I will say this. I don't know if it was a sure lock that a third round pick would get the Giants to be able to move up to the 18 spot.
No, it's not a lock. Just the value chart, I'm saying. It's definitely
Definitely understand. I mean, I would take O.J. Howard over Evan Ingram and Davis Webb, and I wouldn't even think twice. But you guys make some good points. I'm interested to watch him in preseason.
Me too.
I just feel like this fan base is interesting. If Davis Webb goes out there, he has a good preseason, and, you know, especially that first and that second and then the fourth game where we see a lot of them. In the middle of the season, we see Eli Manning struggling. I can't imagine what people would be asking about, especially if Webb has a good preseason.
That's a great point.
Yeah, I mean, it's the fan base. It's also New York media. I mean, it's a lot of nonsense, and
a lot of nonsense.
Yeah, we'll cross that bridge when we come to it.
One thing is, and I'll close with this. We'll close with this when it comes to the quarterback position. If Davis Webb is the answer, then God bless the Giants for only having to use a third-round pick to get their next franchise quarterback.
And not only that, but pretty much nailing it on their first attempt. I mean, we knew Ryan Nassib wasn't going to be the successor, but if Davis Webb is the guy on their first try, I mean, then Jerry Reese and Ben McAdoo are, you know, give them a bajillion dollars, because there are many personnel assessors around the league who have not been able to nail down that position. And if they nail it with a third-round pick on their first try, I mean, good God.
There have been teams that have been trying to do it for the last 5 to 10 years, and they still can't do it. Just look across the street at the New York Jets.
Yep, they're the prime example. All right, let's move on. Let's sort of group the later-round picks all together. Weiss, I'll let you start this one, because I know you're a huge Wayne Gallman fan. You know, I like Avery Moss. You know, Dan, I know you compared him to Robert Ayers earlier. That's a comparison that I've seen thrown around a bit. Biznawati is probably my favorite of the later on picks, strictly because of value. And even Jerry Reese said, you know, I saw guys getting paid millions and millions of dollars who had the same skill set as Biznawati. And I don't totally disagree. I mean, you look how much guys like Russell Okung got paid, and he was almost as bad as Eric Flowers was this past year. So, you know, taking a late round flyer on a guy like that, I got no problem with. Gallman doesn't excite me as much as it excites you, Weiss. But then again, I wasn't like, you know, I didn't hate Paul Perkins. I just wasn't excited about him until I actually watched him get in a game with the Giants. So why don't you take it away? You can rave about Wayne Gallman a little bit and then touch on Avery Moss and Biznawati.
Yeah, I really like the value that they got Wayne Gallman. And the one thing about Gallman is he played at Clemson, and he played in a lot of big games. And he was sort of that tone setter in the national championship game back in January. He made some good things out of the backfield. I just love I love his cuts. He's just a slasher, and he's 6 foot. He's 6'1", 215. He has good size. I wouldn't call him a power back, but he does a lot of good things. He has a nice burst, and his vision is just amazing. He finds the hole, and he just runs right through it. I actually thought he would go in kind of like the third round, maybe in the later portion of the second round, if a team was really desperate for a running back at that time.
Right.
But getting him in the fourth round is a good value. His pass protection is a little bit of a question mark, but he has the size, and I think he's also one of those motivated blockers. I saw some things on him about that, where he can learn it. He runs tall. He runs fast. You guys will see. I mean, in the preseason, he's definitely a great complement, and I think the Giants, having Perkins and Gallman, I think they can create sort of what Atlanta has with Freeman and Coleman. So I it's a perfect pick for me. I love the pick. Great value. I think he's going to come in, and he fits what the Giants are actually looking for. I think a power back is not sort of what they were kind of hoping for. I think they were more looking for the guy that has some size, but is more of like a DeMarco Murray type thing. And I think that's what Gallman brings to the table. In regards to Avery Moss, I think the interesting thing that Jerry Reese said was he's a complete defensive end.
Yep.
Meaning he plays the run passer, and he plays the run really well. And I really like that you said that. It really, you know, opened my eyes. I was like, yep, that's 100% true. And you watch Avery Moss. I remember I read something on Moss where, you know, obviously Youngstown State, there was the other defensive end, Derek Rivers.
Yep.
And he said, I turn on the tape to watch Rivers, but I see Moss making plays that Rivers made as well. So that's definitely a plus two. The tackle, Biznawati, another great quote from Jerry Reese. He's kind of like the David Deal. And that makes sense. I could definitely see him potentially playing first starting spot, if not this year, possibly next year. And they did trade up to get him. So we'll see. But I like these later round guys, that specifically Gallman and Avery Moss, who's really growing on me. I think they did extensive research on his background, and they took him. So I have really no complaints on any of the later round guys. I love Gallman.
Yep. Dan, before I throw it to you, just one quick point on Biznawati. Honestly, the offensive line in general, this is a stat from Gil Brandt. Only 33 offensive linemen were selected in the draft, fewest in the common draft era. 23 of them were taken on day three. So obviously, and this was a thing going into, the weeks leading up to it, it just wasn't a very good tackle class. I was very high on Forrest Lamp. Obviously, the Giants foregoed him to take a guy like Evan Engram. But, to get someone like Biznawati, and I read Jerry Reese's quote before, I think it's great value. So, Dan, why don't you go ahead and touch on the fourth, fifth, and sixth round picks?
Yeah, I'll get to them kind of point by point, but I do want to make a couple general draft observations. Sure. I didn't get a chance in the 60 seconds. First of all, to your point you just made, Ethan, I agree with that. And the report came out like kind of a week before the draft that said the Giants are pretty much unimpressed with the entire top of the class.
Right.
Then when Jerry Reese was asked about it, was there any – because he the way the Giants do it, they break down their draft board by groups. A first group, a second group, they think in different rounds. And they asked Reese, was any of these offensive tackles even in your group? And he said there was one. He said there weren't any when we picked. And then if you just look at the draft results, you see there was only one taken before the Giants in the first place. Exactly. So, I think they're kind of bulls or bust. And I kind of like the strategy. And although I think Jerry Reese can tend to be too skill position heavy with his early draft picks, over all his 11 drafts since he entered the NFL, he's taken 11 for running back, receivers, or tight ends in the first three rounds. That's a lot. But at the same time, I think the strategy makes a little bit of sense because if you look at all the recent studies done, due to the way the college offenses are changing, offensive tackles have a much, much, much higher bust rate than any Absolutely. Position coming into the draft.
I mean, the Rams didn't even renew Greg Robinson, I believe. They didn't pick up his fifth-year option. A lot of you could even say top five tackles in the last few drafts have busted.
Oh, yeah, Jokel's another one of them. There's plenty of options there. And that just goes to show Greg Robinson, I thought, was like the most surefire pick ever. One of the Giants straight up for him. But anyway, so I don't mind that strategy, drafting into the strength, taking less risk. It's more a risk-averse strategy to go for those offensive tackles because they could bust. So I will say I like that. And the other thing I liked is I came into this draft having two real things I wanted the Giants to do. And this is based entirely on the strength of the draft. I wanted to get one of the running backs because this was literally the best running back class I've ever scouted, and I've only been doing this for like a few years, but I've read from a lot of people it's been the best in the past decade, and the Giants had a need at running back, and they needed some talent there, and they did that. They got somebody, and a guy who I had in a group that was above like that final tier that I didn't want. And the other thing is I thought there were so many tight ends in this draft who could stretch the seam and get across, get vertical on defenses, and that's very, very rare in drafts nowadays. Like, if you look at the past three or four drafts, there's maybe one player max who can do it. And there were so many in this draft, and I wanted the Giants to get one of them. And I knew they had to do it in the first or second round, or they were never going to be able to do it. And they did that, too. So I like that they did those two things. Those are two things I went in the draft thinking. So now I'll kind of break it down pick by pick. I like the Gallman pick. When I started my pre-draft process, he was one of the first guys that caught my attention. I was like, this is my guy. This is going to be one of my sleepers. But then as I kind of looked through the draft more, I had like 4, 5, 6 other guys I loved in the middle round. So I don't love it just as much as Ethan does. I had a little bit of a higher grade on the running back who went a few picks before Gallman. I believe it's the guy from BYU. Why am I forgetting his name?
Jamal Williams.
Yep,
Jamal.
I really liked him. I also really, really liked my sleeper in this draft, who the 49ers took way earlier than I thought anyone would take after he, like, quit football. The guy quit football for a season and was kicked off the team another season, so he had tons of off-field issues. But was this Joe Williams guy from Utah? I watched his tape. I thought he was unfreaking believable. I think this guy is going to be that, like, for fantasy football leagues, I'm going to have him as my late-round pick in every league to overtake high by the season point. Swear to God. But so I had a lot of guys I really liked, but I'll tell you a few things I like about Gallman. Weiss mentions DeMarco Murray. I think he's somewhere in between DeMarco Murray and James Starks. And Pro Football Focus made the James Starks comparison, so I've kind of got in my head. But it really is exactly what he is. He's a jump cut runner. He makes that jump cut like Starks did and like Murray does. And it's such a you need great vision to utilize the jump cut as your main move, because you're pretty much setting up the play already knowing where you want to go. You have to, before you make that move, you have to know the hole. And that's what Gallman does best. Like Weiss said, he's a more powerful back than people think. According to Pro Football Focus, he averaged 3.0 yards per carry after contact. We're not talking about his total average, because that was 5.1 yards per carry total running average, which is amazing in itself. The guy racked up 3,424 yards in just three seasons. He never saw more than 282 carries, and that was a way high. He saw 161 and 232 in the other two seasons. So he didn't really get every – he wasn't really a bell cow. He had 34 touchdowns. The one thing you don't like about him is that he ran a 4.6 and he had the 29.5-inch vertical at the combine. But he did have a 120-inch broad jump, so he does have that kind of, like, lateral explosion. I just don't think he's kind of going to be that running back you throw out into the flat and throw passes to, because I don't think that's probably the best move. And he's not a home run hitter, but I do think that the 40-yard dash is the most overrated statistic for a running back. I don't think it really matters. You might not have the 75-yard plays, but you can get those 25-yarders just as much and those 40-yarders without that 4.4 speed. So I really, really like Gallman too. McAdoo actually said that he's going to be mostly a special teams player in his first season. That surprised me a little bit, because he did say Perkins would be the starter on first and second down, and they'll mix in Drone and Vereen on the third downs. I think Gallman will play more than McAdoo's leading on. I think he probably had similar comments about Perkins in his first season. I actually thought McAdoo waited way too long to get Perkins on the field.
Me too.
And I think that was a reason their offense struggled in the first 6 weeks. So I think Gallman will play a little bit more than people expect, but I don't think he's going to play that much in his first year. At least I don't think he's going to kind of pull a Paul Perkins and earn the starting job in year one. But I do love that pick. Moving on, I love the Avery Moss pick. And you know what? I don't know too much about Moss. I've seen what I can see, and I've read what I can read about him. But I just trust – the fact of the matter is I just trust the Giants on defensive ends. I'm just going to put it that simply. They know what they want from that position, and they find talent. Even when they signed Robert Ayers from the Broncos in free agency, that was the end of the free agent class signing for a very cheap price, and he was awesome with the Giants. Like, he broke out with the Giants. Like, if you look at his PFF numbers, he was one of the five best defensive ends in the league in total pressures that year.
He was a pressure machine.
They've done it with JPP. Vernon was an amazing pickup. He's proved already to live up to the contract. They've done it in the past. Kiwanuka was a solid player for them until he got those injuries with the neck and everything like that. So I just trust them. And this guy, Moss, everything I've read is that he would be a second or third round pick if he got to stick out his whole career at Nebraska, because he was making serious, serious progress there. But then he had the off-field issues. The Giants have deemed it him past those issues. Everything I've read about him seems like that should be true. He was with his grandma the day he was drafted because his grandma was sick in the hospital. He kind of, made the point that his grandma's kind of helped change his life. I believe that. And he told her he's going to get drafted, and he made his dream come true. And the thing that we mentioned before that's also great about Moss is that he can kind of kick inside the defensive tackle. He's kind of that hybrid player that Spags likes. So I like that pick a lot. And then we move on to Bisnawadi. And I'm like you, Ethan. I really, really like this pick. I actually think, Weiss made the great point. You guys both made two great points. One, the David Deal comparison, which I like because he's kind of a gritty player who's tough like Deal. Two, I forgot, what was the point you made that you kind of saw him grouped together with, like, guys who are higher in the draft?
Yeah, like Moten.
I think the reason he got drafted so low is because he had a much better 2015 and 2016
season.
Yep,
his play really declined,
And that's kind of a red flag for people, but at the same time, there's a lot of extenuating circumstances we don't know that could have been in play. One, were there injuries he played through that he just didn't complain about? That's what Flowers did, his rookie season. No one knew Flowers was playing through an injury from week one on. So was that the case? And there's a lot of, kind of situations like that that could have been in play. It could have been the offensive scheme. They changed things up a little bit at Pitt, which I noticed. So who knows? But what I really like about Bisnawati is this. He played at Pitt. Pitt is a school in the north, and it gets fucking cold there. It gets really, really cold there. And this is something interesting, because I heard Carl Banks once talk about this. And he said when Parcells used to draft his offensive lineman, Bill Parcells, he would say, I don't even look at the guys playing at Miami, Florida, all those schools. Because in MetLife Stadium, when you're playing in New York and it gets cold in the winter, you got to have offensive linemen who are tough and who have played through these conditions over and over and over again. And Bisnawati's a tough lunch pail guy. That's one of my concerns with Eric Flowers when they drafted him, and I haven't been, you know, and same right. with Bobby Hart for that matter. But that's what I really like the most about Bisnawati, and that's kind of all the three late-round picks I'm sure we'll touch on undrafted free agents at some point real quick. But, yeah, that's my take on those three.
Yeah, I'll run through my opinions on him. Gallman, I can't say I'm as high as you guys are on him. I like him. I think he's great. I think he's being sort of miscategorized. I feel like people see, oh, he's 6 foot, 215 pounds, and they see, you know, a couple of highlights. He's deceptively quick. He's got great feet. He can stop on a dime and change direction. Not at the fastest of speeds, obviously. But I think he could prove to be a nice complement to Paul Perkins. Dan, as you mentioned, I think McAdoo waited way too long to get Perkins involved. So I hope the same isn't the case with Gallman, because I think he can definitely be effective. He can move piles if he needs to. He could be a short yardage back. We already sort of touched on Perkins a little bit earlier. He's kind of a one-cut downhill runner. I'm in love with him. He'll be probably my flex or running back too at some point during this fantasy season. When it comes to Avery Moss, you touched on it. He had off-the-field issues. I believe he exposed himself to a female student in Nebraska and got kicked out. But Bo Pelini, great coach from Nebraska, believed in him enough to bring him with him over to Youngstown State. He's learned from the mistake. If the Giants are doing their sort of research on a player who may have had off-the-field issues, I trust that they've done their research, especially after the Josh Brown incident. They don't need another media shitstorm because a player did something inappropriate or did something negative to a woman. So you got to feel somewhat good about it. You made the Robert Ayers comparison. I like it. And the Giants like their defensive ends very complete. And if you watched his tape, the limited amount of tape you could find from Youngstown State, he's a stop-the-run first kind of defensive end. He can really collapse the pocket. He's got incredibly long arms, so he can get off the blocks quickly and make that second move to get to the running back in the backfield. So he'll prove to be a very nice complement. I would have hoped that at some point during the draft, the Giants would have drafted sort of a pure edge rusher, someone who can really get to the quarterback. But as we've seen, all they need to do is shut down the run, and then on third down, they can really shift their line around to sort of optimize the matchups and get more of a pass rush on the passing down. So at the end of the day, I'm not going to complain about Moss. I think he's going to be a great player. I mentioned before, Bisnawati, my favorite player. Dan, you touched on a few great points. Cold weather, tough as nails, definitely played through some injuries because he did have some back injuries throughout college. And as Jerry Reese said, why overpay for someone like Russell Okung, who's almost as bad as Eric Flowers, when you can get a guy with a similar skill set in Bisnawati later in the draft? So he's going to come in his rookie year, and I'm not saying he's going to take a starting position from Eric Flowers, Bobby Hart, or DJ Fluker, but he's someone who's at least going to push them, and in the event of an injury, I think could be a very solid guy to come in and not be a total liability. So, you know, overall, great draft. I'm happy with the late round picks. Any closing thoughts before we move on to the UDFAs?
We're going to touch on the elephant in the room.
The offensive line. Sure, let's touch on it. Can I start?
Go ahead, you go first. I'm very eager to hear what you say.
Now, I don't think he's listening, but I believe Dan Duggan of NJ.com went on a very big rant about this on his podcast. I really, really, really don't think the offensive line is as big of an issue going into 2017 as people are making it out to seem. I know people wanted an offensive lineman. I loved Forrest Lamp. I would have loved Forrest Lamp. But if you look, and I said it before, you look at 2015, Eli Manning had success behind an arguably worse offensive line in 2015 than he did in 2016. I think the additions of Brandon Marshall and Rhett Ellison and Evan Engram are really going to alleviate some of these issues that we saw last year. The too high safety look, it sort of eliminates that sort of quick hit offense that Ben McAdoo is known for. You add some of these weapons, Brandon Marshall, Evan Engram, Rhett Ellison to help on the blocking side because Eric Flowers and Bobby Hart were left on islands for the most part during the season. Paul Perkins going into his second year. Jarrell Adams going into his second year. I really think, and don't get me wrong, this offensive line is far from dominant, probably far from good. You just need them to be average. They could be 15th or 16th ranked in the league, and this offense is going to have success because of the amount of playmakers they have. So to be quite honest, and maybe this is just me being naive, and especially because I was like the president of the hashtag not my left tackle campaign last year, right? I am far from Eric Flowers' biggest fan. I don't like Bobby Hart. But at the end of the day, I think some of the concerns might be slightly overblown, and I think they've done an okay job of addressing some of those issues.
Dan, you want to go?
Yeah, I mean, the way I see it is this. I'm not sure that the offensive line is going to get any better because I don't think that anyone's going to be playing left tackle except for Eric Flowers, and I have no faith in Eric Flowers personally in the passing game. But I do think that it could matter less for a variety of reasons that I touched on earlier. One, the Giants are going to get better on third downs. Giants are going to get better on in the red zone just because of the talent they're adding and subbing in for Victor Cruz and Will Tye, who are, you know, two of the worst players to run out there on third downs. And I hate to say that about Cruz, but he wasn't an outside receiver. It's the first time he tried in his career, except for, you know, limited stints in 2011 when they mixed things up. And he wasn't good at this stage of his career. So I think that will play a role. And the other thing I think is that we're going to get a little bit of an improvement at right tackle because I do think DJ Fluker will win that job.
And if not for Fluker,
I actually think, and Fluker, by the way, has put together a really impressive offseason. He keeps posting videos of him working out. Obviously, I'm not the type of guy who's just going to watch those videos and be like, oh, this guy's going to be great. But the fact that he's working on his craft a little extra in the offseason can't hurt. And he also just looks in great shape. Like, he looks like he got rid of some of that fat. So I think that'll help him. And if not, I actually think that Biznawati will win the job over, if Fluker doesn't win it, over Hart. I'm very anti-Hart. I don't think he's a former seventh-round pick. There's nothing about him that I like. And I think he should be number three on the depth chart after those two. So I think those two will improve the right tackle situation. But I think overall, one extra thing that McAdoo revealed yesterday when he went on WFAN for an interview with Mike Francesca, which people might have not picked up on, he said that last year he was impressed with that Eli Manning did what they asked. And he said, we had a defense that was really strong, so I asked him to play more of a run first, like a ball control offense, short passing. And I think that actually hurt Manning because they didn't take as many deep shots. And now I realize, based on what McAdoo said, that was part of a plan. And I think that McAdoo, who looked at the tape, he's not an idiot. He looked at all that bad tape from 2016. I think he's going to make some adjustments in his game planning and his strategy and his play calling. They're going to take more vertical shots this year. I think once the Giants offense brings back those big plays into their DNA, they're going to score more points. And yes, they're still going to have times where they get into third and longs and Eric Flowers gives up an awful sack or Biznawati or Fluker gives up an awful sack. But because they're going to also mix in those big plays in other possessions and those touchdowns in other red zone possessions, it's going to kind of make up for it. And the defense will kind of carry them. And the Giants, I actually think the Giants are going to win a lot of games this year. And I don't think the offensive line is going to be too big of a detriment.
Agree. All right, Weiss, you wanted to address the elephant in the room. What's your take?
I think you guys are giving, you know, Jerry Reese, Ben McAdoo a little bit of a pass.
Oh!
Look,
Coming from me? No.
Yeah. Look, I mean, I'm 100% with them. And listen, Ben McAdoo said he wasn't really a fan of the offensive lineman in this draft. You know, Jerry Reese kind of took a shot at the offensive lineman when he said that, you know, his sixth-round pick, Biznawati, had the same skill set of some of the guys that got paid. My thing is, if you're not a fan of the offensive lineman in the draft, which I wasn't a fan of either, outside of probably Garrett Bowles, I don't think there was any surefire day one starter at tackle in this draft. So I thought that they could have been a little bit more aggressive in free agency. I thought that, you know, the big names, the Okuns, the Ricky Wagners, the Andrew Whitworths, I thought that was a little bit out of their price range. But a guy like, you know, Menelik Watson, who got a three-year, $18 million deal, I thought that was a very affordable. And my thing was, I thought the Giants had to come away of this draft and offs in free agents period with one starting caliber tackle. and didn't have to be left tackle. Didn't have to, and it could have been right tackle. And I thought Menelik Watson could have been a starter at the right tackle position. I look at Earl Watford, who got a two-year deal with the Jaguars, I believe. Somebody like that. Look, I like DJ Fluker. I'm not sitting here saying he can't start at right tackle, but I'm not really a fan of his, and I really don't think that he can necessarily come in and be guaranteed that we can say he's going to be our right tackle. So I thought that, look, I'm a fan of Jerry, and listen, I'm a fan of McAdoo as well. But I think that, look, there was a glaring weakness on this team. I'm not saying, and I'm definitely not saying that all their offensive blame is because of Bobby Hart and Ereck Flowers. I think there's enough blame to go around to everybody, including the quarterback. But I just thought they had to be a little bit more aggressive. Maybe, okay, you didn't want to reach for an offensive lineman. Fine. That's more of a long-term investment. But you could have paid an extra $2 million or $3 million and gotten yourself a better option at right tackle here. Jerry said, look, he's putting his faith in Ereck Flowers, talked about the age. And, you know, I think the biggest weakness with Ereck Flowers, I thought his footwork improved. I thought his punch is the big thing with me. Can't really set his hands correctly and get that punch in there. All you can ask is that he's at the facilities working hard. They've been really gloating about that. But I just thought that, you know, they could have been a little bit more aggressive. And maybe if you didn't want to overpay, like if you didn't want to overreach for an offensive lineman, fine. But you could have at least overpaid. It could have been a short-term investment for them. And I thought I would feel much better about this season if they would have gotten that one guaranteed starter on the new starter on the offensive line. So that's my take on it. They're facing a lot of good teams, a lot of good pass rushers this year in that AFC West. So, you know, those tackles could end up costing them a game if it needs be. That's my take on it. And if it doesn't work out with Ereck Flowers, there's going to be a lot of people that are going to be, you know, that seat is going to get warmer in the public eye for Jerry Reese. Not just for him, but for Ben McAdoo as well, because it was McAdoo who came out first and said he wasn't really a fan of any of these tackles. So that's my take on it. They could have been a little bit more aggressive in free agency, in my opinion.
Okay, yeah. I mean, I'm not going to disagree. Especially because I was one of the biggest offensive line critics this past season. In terms of price and value, I don't know if they could have gotten someone worthwhile. I think we just got to wait and see. I don't think Ereck Flowers can get any worse. And if Bisnawati is decent, I think we could be in a much better situation than we're anticipating. All right, we've been going for quite a while. Let's do a quick roundup on the UDFAs. Chad Wheeler. Someone I'm excited about, another offensive lineman who sort of fell out of the draft due to off-the-field issues. I'm excited about him. I believe Travis Rudolph, wide receiver, FSU, another guy I'm excited about, very high character. I don't know.
Great story.
Yeah, great story. I don't know if every listener knows. He went viral last summer, or end of last summer, rather, for eating lunch with an autistic boy when a bunch of FSU players went to go visit their school. So high character guy, really like that pickup. And I believe who is their priority? Who did they pay the most money? Was it Travis Rudolph of their UDFA pool?
No, it was Wheeler 20K.
Okay, so the first guy I mentioned, Chad Wheeler. So why don't you guys just go ahead, give a minute or two on your UDFAs?
Yeah, I like that the Giants. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, go ahead, Dan. You're the guest.
I was just jumping in. I like that the Giants made their priority signings this year, offensive linemen. We usually see them spend that extra money on UDFAs at the skill positions, so I thought that was important. Wheeler would have been drafted if it weren't for the off-field stuff, but I think he'll be fine. I don't think that's going to be that big of an issue. And then the other guy who you didn't mention, you mentioned Rudolph. I think there's going to be a big three kind of for the UDFAs. If you look at it in the past, three UDFAs made a major impact last year: Roger Lewis, Andrew Adams, and and obviously Romeo Okwara. So I think that there'll be another big three: Rudolph, Wheeler, and the guy who you didn't mention, Ethan, this Jessamine Dunker guy.
Yep.
Jerry Reese said he was the most athletic one of the most athletic linemen in the entire draft class. I actually found a way to watch a little bit of him, and he looks like he does have some of that kind of Joel Bitonio type athleticism that the Browns fell in love with. Obviously, way different prospects. He's not at that level, but I do like the idea of an athletic lineman because I think you can't teach that type of thing, the athleticism. So those are the guys I'm most excited about. What about you, Weiss?
I'm surprised you guys haven't mentioned this one, I guess because of the Dalvin Tomlinson pick, but I really love Jerron Jones from Notre Dame.
Yep.
Yeah.
I watched a bit of him today. I mean, this guy has some long arms. I mean, JPP has long arms, but Jerron James has 35.5-inch arms. I mean, he's just
a telephone poles.
He is 6'6", 316. He's got long arms. I guess the reason why he went undrafted was because there's some character concerns. There's questions about his work ethic, and you know, I could understand why. But he has a real, real opportunity to really make this team. And if I'm Jay Bromley and I'm Robert Thomas, you know, I better impress during this summer and this spring, because let me tell you something. Tomlinson's got one roster spot, but this guy Jerron Jones, he is the real deal. If you watch some tape, I forget there was one game where, I mean, there's 4 or 5 times in that game where he just collapses the pocket by himself. I mean, he was dominant. And we'll see what he does. Oh, the game was against Miami. If you guys go back, watch Notre Dame versus Miami. There were times where he dominated the field. And I'm eager to see him this summer. That's one guy. In addition to Wheeler and the offensive lineman from, I think, Tennessee State. Obviously, they're intriguing just because there's so much of a question mark on the offensive line. But this is one name that I'm really watching. If I had to pick one guy that would make the 53-man roster, I would say it's Jones, because, you know, after Tomlinson, in regards to Bromley and Thomas, I could definitely see Jones beating out Thomas for that last roster spot.
All right. Awesome. Anything else before we get into a few quick questions and wrap up? All righty, then.
Get to the questions, yeah.
All right, let's get to the questions. This is from Mike Seaman. Will Bobby Hart and Eric Flowers truly improve enough next year for Eli to be able to examine the field and throw deep occasionally? I'm going to say yes, because I think Eric Flowers is going to have help from Rhett Ellison on the left side. And I honestly don't think Bobby Hart's going to be the starting right tackle. So if it is DJ Fluker, I think that Eli will have time to take a deep shot occasionally.
Yeah, I'm with you on that one, just because I don't agree. I don't think it'll be Hart. I think they'll be improved by taking Hart out of the lineup. You know, they moved Newhouse into the lineup as the starter at the end of the season. They effectively benched Hart. I know Jerry Reese talked him up, and that's why he's probably involved in this question, but I wouldn't look too much into that. And then the other thing is what I mentioned earlier, which is that, you know, that McAdoo mentioned they kind of scaled back the offense last season. I don't think that'll be the case this season. I think he realizes, okay, I don't care that we have a great defense. The way our offense works is we need to take some deep shots. We need to push the ball a little bit. We can't, you know, because if we try that, the problem with the Giants was last season, that ball control offense worked for a little bit. They got a first down. They got maybe 2 first downs, and maybe even sometimes 3 first downs, and then they would stall. And that's the issue. Once, you know, the issue is that they were stalling. It wasn't that they couldn't get 1 or 2 first downs with that style. So I think they will be able to drive the football down the field just simply by changing up the way they call the offense.
My thoughts are exactly what Ethan said. I don't think Bobby Hart's the week one starter, and I think we'll see some improvement from Eric Flowers this year.
Yep. All right. Let's go to Paul Joseph. Who will you look for to immediately improve our team? I'm looking at Darian Thompson. That's an interesting pick. I would probably agree with that. If he's healthy, I think Darian Thompson would be one to really improve the team. If we're talking specifically draft picks, I think, honestly, no argument. It's got to be Evan Engram, just because of all the reasons we listed earlier and the problems with how stale the offense was. He'll help with the different formations. He can expose linebackers. He'll help with that too high safety look. So I got to go Engram, especially because Giants first round picks tend to be very, very impactful players, especially right away.
Yeah, I'm with you. Listen, tight end is not really a premier position. And if the Giants use a first round pick on the tight end, they're going to work Engram a lot. They're going to, you know, create plays for him to get him the ball. They call him a mismatch, so I'm interested to see how they use him. So I'm definitely going to say Engram, but I like Thompson as well. I think he's kind of like that other rookie coming into. He only played like 2 games. So that's another guy I'm really excited to watch. They spoke fairly highly of him last year, and when he was on the field, he was making plays. So I'm interested to watch Thompson as well.
I'm going to go with Brandon Marshall. I kind of made my case for it earlier on the podcast, so I don't need to again, but I just think that he is going to get back to that 2015 form now that he's healthy. I think he runs that deep in route better than anyone the Giants have had in a long time since Akeem Nix. And I think that's the route Eli can really consistently hit for that 12 to 15-yard middle to short intermediate to deep pass. So I really like what he's going to bring to the offense.
Awesome. Let's do one more quick one. This is one we got a few people. Kamal and Zach asked, which rookie or UDFA will make the most of his opportunity this season, causing the coaching staff to play him over a veteran? So let's just do strictly UDFA since we already talked rookies. I'm going to go Chad Wheeler. I think any offensive tackle that can stay healthy and is, you know, pretty athletic, I think they'll be able to push whoever is at either tackle position to at least get to a backup role. I don't know if they'll force, you know, their way into the starting lineup, but between Wheeler and Dunker, I think one of the tackles will make their way up the depth chart. Dan?
That's a tough one for me because I mentioned the big three, and I do think that those are the guys who will definitely make the biggest impact down the line and be with the team for the longest. But I got to say, and it sounds like it just happened the minute I heard Weiss said it, but Weiss did help convince me. I think Jerron Jones might have a really good chance of getting into the rotation earliest on the defensive tackle spot and kind of making the biggest first-year impact. I really don't envision too many scenarios where Wheeler or Dunker is playing on the line, and you don't really sub in. There's no rotation with offensive line, really, so... And I don't think Rudolph will make an impact on that wide receiver corpse either. So I'm going to go with Jones.
Yeah, for me, it's Jones. I just think that because after Tomlinson, there's a lot of uncertainty with Bromley and Robert Thomas. After Snacks and Tomlinson, there's a lot of uncertainty for who's that third. And I could easily see Jerron Jones beating out not only Robert Thomas, but Jay Bromley as well. I mean, I'm really, really interested in him. I was a tad surprised that he wasn't drafted. He was a guy that caught my eye toward, I think it was Friday night. I was kind of looking at the remaining guys and who could be like a late round pick. And he was one guy that I read about that, you know, was really interesting. I mean, he's a big dude and he's a guy that, you know, I could definitely see pushing for a roster spot.
Definitely. All right. Do we have any final thoughts before we round up? Dan Weiss.
Well, what's your grade on the Giants draft?
All right. Yeah. Let's do this.
Let me ask you a question.
Okay.
Last year, I gave the Giants draft an A because they took a lot of guys that I was like, yes, in particular Sterling Shepard, Darian Thompson, Paul Perkins. But what would you give? What did you give last year to the Giants grade, the Giants draft, and 1 year later, what would you give them now? So tell me your grade for the Giants 2016 draft a year later.
I honestly don't remember what I gave them. If I had to guess, I'd probably say it was in the B- range. Obviously that's an A because they had so many players that, came in and made an immediate impact. You know, we're looking at Paul Perkins, fifth round pick, who's going to be a starter. Jarrell Adams, who's going to be a major blocking presence at the tight end position. Darian Thompson, who's going to come in healthy this year. Sterling Shepard. I mean, it was a great draft class, no doubt about it. And probably one of the first times in Jerry Reese's career where you're going to have late round guys be staples of this team for the next few years. So obviously that draft, 2016 draft, is an A. I was probably less high on it last year. I would say I'd probably gave it a B minus. This year's draft, I'm going to give it a B plus. I think there's a lot of players that fill need positions. Obviously I'm a little higher on Davis Webb than you are, Weiss. I think he has the opportunity. I'm not saying he is, but he has the chance to be Eli's successor in a few years. So, at this point in time, I'll give it a B plus.
Yeah,
the way I see it is I was also extremely high on that 2016 class, but I did only give it a B plus, and I'll get to why in a second. The reason I was so high on it is because Paul Perkins to me was one of the best value picks in the entire draft by any team. I loved him before the draft. I watched that one cut against Stanford, and then I had to watch every single thing I could find on him, and he just has like a unique ability to cut that I haven't seen from really any prospect since. Obviously he doesn't have the straight line speed to pair with that, or else he'd be like an all pro Le'Veon Bell type. But, right, you know, he's unbelievable. And I love Jarrell Adams. I thought that was like the best 6th round pick the Giants almost ever made. I had no clue why he was still on the board. Like Thompson, the reason I didn't love that draft at the time was because I didn't think Eli Apple was a smart pick at 10. I just think they could have got him in the teens to 20 range. And Jerry Reese is just so unwilling to make a trade back, even though maybe, you know, if Apple goes, you can still get someone similar, I thought. I like the cornerback the Texans guy who got injured for the entire season, or the Bengals guy who got injured for the entire season.
William Jackson.
William Jackson. So we'll know. We'll see how he goes. We'll see what happens with that. But if I had to grade it now, I'd still give it only a B+, only because I'm now very worried about Sterling Shepard pick. And this has only been one season, and there were some circumstances in play, but I didn't see the same explosive player I saw at the college level in his first season. There were no, you know, there were no 45, 50, 60-yard touchdowns out of Shepard, really. Were there any the entire season?
No.
There were none, and that's a game.
That wasn't a 40, 50-yard touchdown. You're right.
I don't even know if he had too many 40, 50-yard big games. He had that one over the middle he kind of took to the inside the five. That was kind of like a 25, 30-yarder towards the end of the season. I don't remember exactly what game that was. But, you know, I was expecting, you know, if you're going to draft a player that high, he has to make those kind of plays sometimes, and he made them at Oklahoma. And now I think he could become a little bit expendable with Ingram, because I know Ingram can line up at H-back. I know he can sometimes line up in line, but he's really a slot. He's really the you know, the move tight end position. So we'll see. And as far as this draft goes, I'll give it a B+, only because I don't like the idea of using a third round pick on a quarterback, but everything else I liked.
Last year I gave the grade of an A, solely because I love the Paul Perkins pick. I loved him. And the move that he made against Stanford, he made a similar move on the Bears. I think it was Tracy Porter.
Yep.
He just knocked Tracy Porter out of the screen. But I love the Perkins pick. I love the Darian Thompson pick. That was one of the main reasons why I gave it an A. This year, I'm going to say that A is kind of like an A-, just because there's still some uncertainty with Darian Thompson. I hope he can come back and play this year healthy. This year is great. I'm going to give it a B-. I still have my doubts on taking that quarterback. I thought there was some guys there. There was an option to trade up as well for some. For a guy. I was a really big fan of Garcia, the guy that the Patriots took. I thought he could have been a guy that come in and be a day one starter at right tackle. But other than that, I mean, it's a B-. I think the Tomlinson pick grew on me. I love the Ingram pick. And obviously Wayne Gallman. I'm a big fan of Wayne Gallman. So B- for me. I'm not going to mention the third round picks, Steve.
All right.
I want to close out with one last thing that I found interesting. Okay, so yesterday Ben McAdoo did something completely out of character and named Paul Perkins the starter. I don't think it's so out of character it is out of character for McAdoo, but when you consider what we saw from Perkins down the stretch of that season, week 17, his first chance to be the starter, rush for over 100 yards on 20 carries. He didn't do that great in the playoff game, but the Packers have a great run defense. They were top five at the end of the season, and I couldn't completely blame that on him. So we all saw that, you know what I mean? So I thought it was a little bit odd after Perkins was named the starter, Roto-World, a site that I absolutely love, I get them for all my news, I've read them forever, I read their columns, I think they're amazing. But I'm just going to read you the blurb that the Roto-World writer wrote up on Paul Perkins. Just see if you guys think this is interesting too. All right, here we go. As a number of Giants reporters pointed out on Twitter, it's not surprising, but it is surprising that McAdoo would publicly admit that that Perkins is a starter. Instead of trying to force a sense of competition on early downs, the Giants will spend the offseason pumping up Perkins' confidence. Perkins had a shaky rookie year, but it's hard to make sweeping judgments considering the line he was running behind. In what world did Perkins have a shaky rookie year? Like, I'm just trying to look it up. Like, I really couldn't find anything about his rookie season that was shaky. Am I off here? Was he bad at times that I just and I have rose-colored glasses? Like, how was that a shaky rookie year? Can someone explain this to me?
Dan, I'm going to say one thing to you, all right? I used to be a Fairweather fan like 5 years ago. I didn't really keep tabs on my team like that. I was knowledgeable about the history. But I realize now, 5 years that has gone by, that stuff that is written, especially on your team that you're knowledgeable about, that you watch, you realize that a lot of people don't know what the hell they're talking about. you'll read stuff and you'll be like, what? This is simply not true. I read somewhere they were describing how Ingram would fit in. I'm not going to mention the writer. I'm not going to mention where it was. But they were talking up the Giants offense from a year ago, and they were saying that it was such an explosive offense. They had so many big plays. And Ingram will come in and he'll fit right in because he's a big play target. And I'm like, wait, are you mistaking like the Giants offense from last year to 2015? There's a big difference.
Yeah.
But, yeah, you see that there's a lot of people that don't know what they're talking about. They don't.
Found that so shocking. I couldn't believe that could be considered a shaky rookie season by any measures. Like the amount of work Perkins did behind that offensive line, he still only averaged 4.1 yards a carry, but that's a miracle behind that line. I just thought it was unbelievable, but that was just me.
Yeah, no, I mean, he's going to be amazing this year, and anyone who's dumb enough to write something like that will be proven very, very wrong.
I love
me some time to teleport, baby. All right. It's been a long episode. This might be one of our longest to date. Let's wrap up. You guys already know it, but I'll do it again. Subscribe. iTunes, Google Play, Audio Boom. All the links will be available on Twitter, on our website, GothamSN.com. Go follow Weiss at NYG Daily. Go follow me at EthanGSN. And then go follow our guest, Dan Schneier, at Dan Schneier, NFL, at, and I'll spell it out, Dan, correct me if I'm wrong, DanSchneier, NFL.
That was close, but it was close. DanSchneier. So it's basically Schneider, but no D. It's the easiest way to do it.
All right, go follow him on Twitter. The link will be in the tweet. Dan, thank you for joining us, and we will speak to you all next week.